It's 1 year since I spoke to Mark Warner, CEO of Liberation Labs, just as the company was breaking ground on its mission to revolutionise industrial scale precision fermentation. Much has happened since, some delays due to financing, which they've overcome, and are now striding forward, both in the USA and in Saudi Arabia, with capacity filling contracts now in place for when they're fully functional. So listen now for all the LibLab updates. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interviews. All episodes are available on Substack, Spotify, and other podcast providers. Okay, so Mark Warner, thank you for coming back onto Future of Foods Interviews. It's been almost a year since we spoke, or since at least we released the last podcast, and so much has happened with Liberation Labs since that time. I thought it would be very good to have a catch up. So just briefly, I know you've been in Saudi Arabia, and which is quite exciting, kind of NEOM. And also how close are you to completion of the facility now? I can see that's the construction behind you. Is that where you are? Yeah. Or is it further along than that now?
No, this is within a few weeks. So looking back at June of last year, certainly a lot has gone on since then. Unfortunately, we were really getting to late stage of closing around. I think when we talked, we thought we'd close it within a month or two. It took us till January to finally close it. So that meant we had to really pause construction second half of last year, which was difficult but necessary. You know, we had to do it to keep the company and the project moving forward. We did close that round in January, which gives us the resources to complete construction of the facility. And that's been important for a couple reasons. Kind of related to that, you mentioned that we've signed a partnership with the NEOM Group and their food, call it sister company of Topian. This is to investigate doing a feasibility study for building in the Middle East. It's also given us more of a clear path to completing construction by the end of the year to where we've actually signed our first customer, which we announced recently. Vivici out of Europe. It's a partnership between DSM and Fonterra. They make a beta-lactoglobulin, think whey protein, but kind of the new generation, more functionality. So that's certainly a very positive event for us also.
Yeah, so that is using 200% of your capacity for 5 years, or is that...
Not them alone. So we've got interest of that level. Their contract is for certainly less than that. We're not disclosing the actual terms, but it's a material contract for production of their product. But I can't tell you it takes up the whole facility.
And that would be in the Richmond facility, wouldn't it?
That's correct. Yeah, which will be our only operating facility next year. So yeah. And it's well suited for it. It's designed for that kind of product. And frankly, it's in the right geography. Most of those novel proteins, the biggest market today is the US for those. So,
okay. So with the deal in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia with NEOM and Topian, you said it was to sort of look at the option of building a facility there. So how likely is it that you will build a facility out there in the Middle East?
It's always been our plan since founding. It's in our mind more of a question of when, not if. And it's more than just looking at it. So this first facility, we built on more equity than we had hoped. We built it, you know, more as a drive from our investors, being confident there would be a market there. But later facilities, we know have to have more of a predictable offtake. So once this facility is up and operational in Richmond, that means later facilities we would do under a more traditional approach where you do the engineering feasibility study. We know the cost, we know the schedule, all that. It's what we would refer to as a bankable engineering package, meaning we have high confidence in how much the project's going to cost and how long it takes. We're really just waiting then for customer offtake to make it financeable. So, the thing I would say is you'd never do this level of engineering if you were just, dipping a toe in the water. We believe there's a strong likelihood we'll move forward, or we wouldn't do this level of engineering. It's just what is the right configuration, what's the right location for the plant, and a lot of it's to meet the goals of Saudi Arabia and the greater Middle East for, independent food production for a lot of these novel proteins.
Yeah, so is this linked to their the project that they've got called Line, or called The Line?
No, not direct. NEOM obviously is related to that, our funding source, but Topian is doing projects both within NEOM and outside of NEOM. So it's not specifically related to us doing anything related to that specific project.
Okay, so. So your facilities in Richmond, you are pretty much booked up for the foreseeable future then, in regard to capacity, would you say?
I wouldn't say booked up. So the 200% you're talking about, we've got definitely more interest right now of people in discussions with us than the facility can make. That said, not all of it's under firm contract yet. And it's really been the literal chicken or egg. What happened was we had this 200% of people who were all interested in using the facility, but as you can imagine, they weren't really ready to commit till they knew we had the financial resources to complete it. So it's really only been since January, February, when we closed that round and restarted construction, that we've gotten back into very substantive negotiations on these contracts. Vivici was the first. There's a couple more behind it. But just full disclosure, they're not final yet, but we're cautiously optimistic that by later this year, before the facility starts, that we would have a solid base load for all of next year.
Right. I mean, I suppose there aren't really many alternatives for companies that want to produce at this kind of capacity, are there?
No, not well, not cost effective. There's certainly a network out there of facilities. They're legacy facilities. They average 40 to 50 years old, and they're in other parts of the world than the US. What makes this facility unique is, first, it's designed for these modern processes, so we're confident it's going to be more cost effective than what's out there today. It's also in the right geography, both from a cost and a market perspective. The only real markets for a lot of these novel precision fermented proteins is the US today. I think there's hope and expectation that Europe and Australia and other areas will open up in the next 3 or 4 years, but it's not there today. So, and that's part of the reason we are looking to grow internationally. We do believe adoption will get much wider internationally, but it's not there today.
Okay. So when we spoke in June last year, you said that you'd be operational by early 2025. Now, as you said at the start of the conversation, there was some hold up in regard to this sort of funding. What sort of hold up was that? Are you allowed to kind of say what?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we believed we had a signed term sheet and believed we would close it last summer. It took till January, what, 7, 8 months later. So we literally had to pause the project for about 8 months of construction. So that almost that entire delay was related. The project would have been complete on original schedule if we had had all the funding when we had hoped. And I'm sure I'm not the only founder that's told you how difficult the funding environment is. If you're fortunate enough, like we were, to get the funding, it's just on a much slower timeline than it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay, so what was it specifically that kind of made the funding kind of I suppose unpredictably long? Because if you thought it was going to end in summer and then it was extended by 8 months, that sounds like some big complications.
I wouldn't say as much big complication. So what happens is when you have a round like this, You have big checks and medium-sized checks. So there's usually you have a minimum threshold to hit of total financing. In our case, it was this. You saw us announce the $51 million was kind of the minimum we could close around. And what happens is things get delayed, where you have groups, maybe not the biggest checks, but the secondary checks that had tentatively agreed to come in. It had been 3, 4, 5 months, and just with the markets turning tougher, some of those secondary checks weren't there. So it took us much longer than we expected to get the whole consortium together to hit that minimum threshold. But again, none of what I'm telling you is different than anyone you talk to in the space. It was just a very difficult time that, quite frankly, the number of companies deploying capital in the space went down by an order of magnitude almost.
Right. And it went down by that number sort of in the summer last year, then, or at the end of the summer last year.
First half of last year and into the summer, it really started probably before summer last year. It's just there were a lot of groups that had well intentions to be able to get through their credit committee and get to a yes, and just took longer. Or people just, I can't give specific companies and examples, but there were people that really believed they were going to be able to deploy, and for business and other reasons, ended up pulling back and not being able to get there. So.
Okay, so these are companies who specifically had decided that their money perhaps wasn't going to work for them in this industry, would you say? Or is it broader than this industry?
Oh, it's broader than this industry. I think you hear beyond just biotech that the amount of venture capital just pulled back. And, I think the risk profile changed. You had an election in there, which always causes uncertainty, no matter which side wins or loses. It causes people to question what things are going to look like. And that all just adds up to slow things down. So, like I said, we feel very fortunate we got there in the end. It was just a longer process than we'd expected.
Okay, so the result of the election it doesn't really have anything to do with it. You know, the uncertainty of what's happened since with since then, because I suppose that was at the end of the year, wasn't it?
Yeah, you could argue, you'll hear the uncertainty around the tariffs. They've certainly added uncertainty. You could argue from our perspective, if anything, it validates we're a U.S. manufacturing play. So that, we started building way before any of those tariffs came in. And I think we all can probably admit we don't know where they're going to end up, but it's certainly not downside for our business case. If anything, depending on where they stay, could enhance us. We've never relied on that. We don't need it, but it definitely just solidifies a US-based production.
Yeah. So the fact that you managed to get the funding, kind of be it slightly later than you expected, is kind of testament to the confidence that investors have in your project, right?
Yeah, we believe so.
So what made you choose the Middle East as the next kind of potential space?
So when we founded, we looked at worldwide. We really broke our aspirations into two phases. And first, I want to say, why beyond the US? We believe international presence is important because one of our thesis is, well, two main theses around the company. First one is what's been holding back a lot of these novel ingredients is they're not made at large enough scale and low enough cost for wider acceptance. They're all some niche product. They aren't to the price point needed. All of our facilities, we believe, will address that. The second thing is there's not really the network necessary for the large CPGs and food companies to want to build on this platform. They're used to using a contract manufacturer in the US, and if the product's popular and they're going to go to Europe, they'll transfer it to a similar type of company there. That doesn't exist today. All these legacy facilities we talked about for precision fermentation are one-off facilities. There's no one that has a network of similar sites. So that's what has us wanting to get in additional geographies. And what it really came down to is cost and offtake. Where can we manufacture at the cost needed, and where do we think the markets are? Our first three targets were US, Middle East, and Australia. And that's been since founding 3 years ago, and that hasn't changed. US and Australia, by I would say traditional cost mechanisms, sugar, power, and labor, all three are very economical in the US and in Australia. Middle East, certainly adjust that a little. I can't say the power is pretty economical. Labor's competitive. Sugar, they don't produce as much of there. They do produce a little, but it's imported. But you add the availability of capital through sovereign wealth and the need for food security. We believe that all comes into a package that makes a facility make a lot of sense there. So that's what's got us doing that. And we're still looking at a facility in the Australia area, but the Middle East is definitely in the position to be number two right now.
So labor-wise, Australia is seen as a good option then, is it? I mean, have they I mean it, I suppose it's kind of it's not cheap labor you're after. It's more skilled labor. Is that
It's cost effective. So what I would say is, so getting back to sugar, labor, and power, that's about 75% of the manufacturing cost, and all three are fairly equal in percentage generally. So when we compare it, it's more when I say Australia, we compare it. So when we do site selection, we'll look at, you could take labor categories under federal reports, and you can look at different countries. Australia, anything within the plus minus 10, 15% range overall, we would consider equal because, exchange markets often float in that kind of range. Those are the kind of labor rates we've seen in Australia and even in the Middle East. Power's very economical in Australia, at least the area up in Queensland, which is kind of their sugar manufacturing area. A lot of reasonable power, and it's all renewable, which is a benefit also.
Okay, I would imagine that the Far East is also quite a good option. Those, I suppose, places like Thailand and where lots of people like Aleph Farms and there are lots of big manufacturers, well, hopefuls that who are kind of going out there now looking for a way into Asia. Have you? Is this an option?
It certainly is. So our secondary, I said we were looking at, multiple geographies. Phase one is Australia. We've certainly looked at Vietnam. We've looked at Thailand. We believe China's very unlikely for IP and other reasons. And that's part of the strategy around Australia is both for local consumption in Australia. And if you look, Australia's historically been a prime exporter to China for different products. So we think it's a good initial launching point for product outside of Asia that could serve it near term. And then I do believe, as we grow, certainly that Southeast Asia component, as I mentioned, Thailand, Vietnam, possibly India, all of those would be under consideration.
Okay, so with the readjusted timelines, when would you say, I mean, when would you expect Liberation Labs now to be kind of running at full capacity, or and when do you expect them to be operating at a profit?
Yeah, so we would expect to be making product first half of next year. I'm not going to say it's a capacity. It'll be a ramp up. We would expect second half of next year to be, if not at capacity, nearing capacity. Usually a facility like this, 3 to 6 month ramp up. It obviously depends on the process we're hosting. We expect at those rates, if we're at least, 30 to 50% utilized next year, we would expect to be profitable at the facility level next year.
Okay, and then the Middle East isn't necessarily kind of confirmed yet, but I suppose when will you know that that's for sure or not?
Late this year and the early next year, we're working on outlining the feasibility study now. We'll kick it off later this year. That's probably a 6, 9 month process. So I would expect Sometime early next year, we'll have better sight on is this something that's going to move forward in the very near term. And again, Richmond up and operational de-risks it. I think, let's just be honest about the cynicism in the industry, and some of it's not unfair of people want to see these products made. They want to see market offtake and a company do it where there's margin for both us and for the other, the company we're producing for. That's really the unlock, because I still think there's a lot of the big CPGs that are very interested in these ingredients. They just have to see the full proof point that they're manufactured at scale reliably. We strongly believe that will be what unlocks the further growth. So as we get into production next year, that's, as a company, we've always believed the number one thing we can do to move our platform forward is just get this facility operational. As we like to say, you can show every techno-economic model in the world and all that. People want to see an operating facility with product and the results of that, profit and loss. That's really what's going to move us forward.
Yeah. Are you beginning to get a little bit frustrated that it's taking longer than you expected?
Oh, that ship sailed a long time ago. Of course, I'm a longtime engineering and construction person. I'll tell you a story. So we have a webcam that I can go look at the facility every day, and I looked at it multiple times a day all last year. I had to quit. I didn't look the second half of last year, because for me to see a bright sunny day in the Midwest that we weren't doing any construction was very painful, but it was the right decision. It's what's gotten us here of having this facility nearing completion. It's a facility we strongly believe the industry doesn't have and needs, and it's the path we had to take to get it there. No one was going to sign a binding contract 3 years in advance before we broke ground. You had to get it close enough to completion that these companies had real confidence that it's going to get complete and operational.
And was there ever a time where you doubted that it would continue or as
You know, I won't say, right before you close around, there's always, I think it's inherent in any process that, are we ever going to get this fully closed? But, our investors have been great throughout the process. We continue to be bridged by our lead investors, Agronomics, City Capital being the two primary ones, and they got us there. So, it was a rough time, but we got there.
Okay, so the workers, the people who were working, they were, I mean, you would have had to have kept paying them while they stopped or not. No, you just kind of
So
laid
you're talking construction or the staff? The company staff, we've always kept very lean. We
right.
you'll hear these companies who have built massive organizations. We're still to this day, of course, staff in the range of 15 or less as Liberation Labs. Now we're getting ready to start ramping up hiring for the facility you see behind me, but the construction management company, the engineering company, the contractors, we had to pause all of that second half of last year. That was all contracted services we had to pause.
Okay. And has the I mean, do you feel the new administration in America, do you think that's going to be good for you or for the industry or what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know that you can't necessarily shout your opinions too loudly, but what's
You
that?
know, we're firm believers in we've never fully, we've never built our model around governmental support. I will note we do have a U.S. Department of Defense biomanufacturing grant. We are studying expansion of Richmond up to 4 million liters. We're in late stage of doing that feasibility study now. So we've certainly appreciated that government support. I guess what I would say is I still think biotech is. It's the right kind of jobs in the right area of the US. As I've always said, I've built facilities around the world. Whenever you build, there's, a facility in the Midwest to do this type of process, there's nobody on either side that doesn't back it, Democrat or Republican. There's just nothing to dislike about it. It's the type of industry we should be building. It's jobs in areas that economically haven't always got this kind of job. So we've certainly felt, you know, the current administration definitely driving the build in America, manufacturing in America, certainly has helped as a higher level. I think we're all waiting to see how that flows down to specifics. But, you know, like I said, at this point, you know, all of our funding has come in, has been non-governmental, other than that feasibility study for expansion. The actual construction of Richmond has been all private funding at this point.
Okay. And have you had kind of politicians show an interest in the project? I mean, I imagine they did.
Tons. Senator Todd Young, who heads the Biosecurity Commission in the U.S., he's a senator from Indiana. He's been to the site. We've met with them and given them our input. I guess what I'd say is if you look at this whole process, they're trying to roll out kind of a new initiative around biomanufacturing. We're fully supportive, but just given the legislative timelines, it's going to play out over the next year, year and a half. It's not something we can wait for on this initial bill. Not that we don't want to see it happen, but we've certainly given our input, and we believe they've given us, you know, plenty of time and interface to give them that. So no, we've, you know, this continues to be biomanufacturing the type of industry that the U.S. wants to see. So again, we expect bipartisan support for these type of ventures to continue.
Okay. So, I mean, we were talking earlier about where companies might go if they weren't using you. I suppose a lot of companies are building their own models, are creating their own sort of facilities. And are there any kind of other companies that are doing what you're doing in the US or in Europe or places like that?
Not right. So the legacy network that's out there today, like I said, it's 40 to 50 year old sites, Mexico, Italy, Germany, Slovakia, India. Those are some of the countries that people use the most. But what's most important is these facilities weren't built to make these products. What makes us different is, and there are, you know, I'll use one example. There's a company that comes to mind is there was a partnership between Genomatica and Cargill to build a facility in Eddyville, Iowa, to make a specific chemical intermediate. I believe it goes into things like carpets and things. That's a purpose-built facility. You'll still see people do that. What's different for us is we've built ourselves to be a contract manufacturer. There's at least 30, 40 commercial processes we've looked at we could make. And we think that's important because I'll use the example of, you hear GLP-1s talked about a lot, you know, the Novo Nordisk and the Eli Lilly product. Many people don't realize both of those products are manufactured at the same facility in Bloomington, Illinois, not far from where we're building this facility. They've been manufactured there for a while. And even though you hear like Eli Lilly, I think it's about a $4 billion expansion, they're building a big facility to make that product, it's not going to be operational for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. So this whole contract manufacturing network of modern fit-for-purpose facilities, it doesn't exist today in industrial biotech. It has for decades in pharmaceuticals. We're trying to bring that to the space because quite honestly, most of these novel biotechnology companies, their expertise is in biology and process development. It's not in design, build, operation of facilities. That's our core skill set. So we believe there's a niche there where we can build and operate these facilities more efficiently than people can build them themselves, to where we can make a reasonable margin and still be a cost-effective solution for them.
Yeah, and I suspect you are looking at building more in the U.S. as well as building them in other countries.
Certainly. I mean, the expansion at Richmond would take us up to 4 million liters. That's a good size facility. I can't say we wouldn't consider additional facilities in the U.S. beyond that. It's more likely we'd get more of an international network first. It's not in Beyond the 4 million liters at Richmond, there's nothing in our near-term plan additional in the US, but we stand ready if we see the need.
Okay. So 2024 was clearly, according to a few people I've spoken to, clearly the worst year for money fundraising than that's, in recent history. Are you spotting any signs of improvements in 2025 in that?
I think some. I think you're seeing, it's kind of a forced shakeout of the industry. I think you're seeing some. And when we talk financing, we've generally been talking equity. But as we start building facilities, we're also interested in the debt mechanisms. We've had some level of debt on this first facility. We have an equipment finance portion, and we've got a USDA loan guarantee that we haven't closed on yet, but it's committed and awarded from the government. We just are working to get things finalized to close that. But we're also seeing more private capital credit come in. We think that's going to be helpful. So I certainly think the equity markets are opening up some, but I also think as you build a fixed facility like this, it doesn't have to all be equity. There's certainly a hybrid anywhere from full equity to full traditional project finance debt. There's all kinds of mechanisms in between. And the more this looks like an infrastructure play, once we get it de-risked and people are comfortable in the market offtake and the cost and the risk of building these facilities, we think it's going to be more like things like server farms, where once they knew the demand and need was there, it becomes more of a financing play. So we're obviously trying to work our way through that transition of less of an equity component and more of a debt component.
Okay, well, finally, Mark, I just wanted to sort of know what's are you I suppose what are the next big milestones for Liberation Labs? What should we be looking out for, or what's on the horizon?
Sure. Hopefully some announcements about additional customers for the facility. Like I said, we're in discussions and would hope, in the next 2, 3 months to be able to announce more on those and completion of operation of the facility. It's, all these things can happen in secondary, but job one for the team has continued to be get it done, built like we need, on budget and up and operational. So we feel quite confident of that, the entire team. We celebrated our third anniversary as a company last week. Most of the team was in the area of Richmond last week, and we feel good about the team and the path forward.
Okay, and more news from the Middle East, maybe.
Maybe. Stay tuned.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Mark, for this update. It's been very useful for me, and I look forward to hearing more.
Yep, appreciate the time.